This podcast is intended to introduce religious feminists to each other and to feminists working on other kinds of issues, so that we can learn from each other and collaborate more. For our first episode of the Religious Feminism Exponent podcast, we're going to start at home and talk about our own brand of religious feminism, Mormon feminism. And when I say that, I want to clarify that within Mormonism, there are some different kinds of Mormons. We're going to be talking about Mormon feminism within the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which make up the majority of Mormons. However, there are other groups of Mormons. For example, the Community of Christ tends to have more progressive policies towards women. And there are also several Mormon fundamentalist sects that have much less progressive policies towards women. We aren't going to talk about those today. And I want to introduce my colleague, Nancy Ross, who's going to help me out with this discussion. Nancy, want to say hi?
Hi, I'm excited to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about the things that we appreciate about our Mormon community. One thing that I love about it is that as a missionary, as a church teacher, because we have a lay clergy, I have a lot of opportunities to teach and to expand the scriptures, to learn more about them by teaching, which is something that's always been very meaningful to me and something I've always enjoyed. What about you, Nancy?
But when I was participating in the LDS Church, I feel like when you are feeling that strength of community and love and support, that is a really beautiful thing. I think about a time when my kids were little, and I have two children, and they're very close in age. And I remember when they were little, I was just totally overwhelmed and feeling a little depressed. And it was just a tremendously difficult thing to be a mother to very young children, and two children so close in age. And I remember my visiting teachers, which is kind of a program that we run in the LDS Church, where women visit each other to offer support and love. And one of my visiting teachers I ended up having for a very long time, for probably like 7 years. And I would just look forward to her visits. It was such a lifeline to me, that connection. And this was really through this church program that had been established so that I could have a little bit of adult contact every month. And I had these wonderful people come into my home and listen and show me love. And it didn't fix my problems, but it really helped me to feel connected to my community and to feel loved, at least by these women that came through the door, you know, every month. And I really appreciated that. I think that when Mormon community works well, it works so well.
For me also, the church is almost, when I think about my extended family, my own family, my parents' families, Mormonism is almost just such a part of who we are as a people. And it's a part of the rituals that we do together. We have the weddings, the baptisms, the missionary farewells. We send people off on those special experiences. So it's almost, you can't extricate the church from our family life. To me, it's just something about who we are, and it's something that I've always loved. It's something that's home. Me.
I think about absolutely. And I think about the ways in which the Book of Mormon is kind of unique to the Mormon tradition, the Restoration tradition. And I read the Book of Mormon through for the first time when I was 13, and then I read it many times throughout my life. I think I quit it about the 23rd read, and I'm looking at reading it again. But it's this way in which this very unique text came to kind of define periods of my life and how I kind of grew up reading this text very kind of intensely, and that reading changed over time. But I feel like that's something that's very uniquely Mormon. You know, I understood my life in terms of this text, and this text helped to really inform kind of elements of my life, and that was that those were important experiences for me.
Is what motivates me to become a better person and what helps me to do that. It's the tool I have to perfect my life. And that community, it sort of follows you everywhere you go. I remember when I was in college and I got an internship in Washington, D.C. And all of a sudden I had to go to a place I'd never been to before and find a place to live. And I didn't know how to get around. I was nervous about when I got off the airport, would I be able to find my way anywhere once I got there? I didn't know where I was going and what I was doing. And I emailed a local congregation in Washington, D.C., a Mormon congregation for help. Like, I'm moving to D.C. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. And almost immediately there were people responding, suggesting places where I could find roommates, a place to live, offering to introduce me and show me around. And it just had was a sense of community that I had anywhere. I always had people to back me up wherever I went.
And that's really lovely. I remember being a grad student in England and being welcomed by the ward and finding wonderful community there of many different kinds of people. And, you know, I think that, again, when Mormon community works really well, you can feel a lot of love and connection to other people. And yeah, that's what we all want in life, right? Love and connection to other people.
Right. Let's talk about our Mormon feminist community. Let's talk about what that does for us. Both of us, Nancy and I, we're both involved in the Exponent, which is a Mormon feminist community which has existed since before either of us were born. It goes back a long time. And it's something that we've inherited. We've inherited the opportunity to participate in this wonderful community where Mormon feminists support each other, where we focus on women and women's needs, and where we specifically share women's voices. So we talk about women's history, we talk about modern women, and we talk about, we sort of support each other and share what women are doing right now.
Absolutely. And I feel like the Exponent is an important connection to me. I feel like my experiences with the Ordained Women movement really helped me to grow as a person and to grow, and I just find my own strength to stand up for what I believed. And that was such a tremendously important experience for me. I think also about, when I think about my most important experiences in the community, there are long, you know, I've been involved with at least reading blogs and things for more than 10 years now. And so I've gone through this period of receiving support from a distance with people I didn't necessarily know and reading conversations and feeling like, oh yeah, I feel that too. Or wow, I really learned something there. But we also have things like Mormon Feminist Girls Camp where we get together during the summer with our kids and we try to kind of pass on some of the things that we have learned about Mormon feminism and to share our values about inclusion and community and love of sisterhood. And one of, and I realize this is a little bit scandalous within the Mormon community, but one of the things that we often do there is to give each other blessings as women. And I think some of my most significant spiritual experiences in my whole life were with watching and participating and being blessed by other women and feeling kind of God's love flow through them, but also the tremendous strength of community. And then feeling like, you know, I went forth from those particular events with a kind of solid foundation of love and of being loved that I hadn't maybe had before and didn't even know that I didn't have before. And I feel like when we are loved deeply, because we're perfect people, but because we are imperfect people, and being loved and supported in that, I feel like we can make better choices and be better people as a result of acting from a place of being loved through and through and very solidly. And those were very special experiences for me and continue to remain important experiences of community. You know, when we are loved, when we know we are loved, we can be our best selves.
Let's talk a little bit about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and how it works, how activism works within that church and the status of women. I think that one thing that's, well, the very first thing that I think is important to know when you're talking about Mormon feminism in among the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is that they have a universal lay clergy. By universal, I mean universal male lay clergy. So they ordain every man and boy over age 12 with very few exceptions. So this creates a situation among Mormons in which virtually every male member of the church outranks every woman.
Right. And that means that men have the final decisions. and that they also have control over the money as well. Not all men have control over the money, but certainly because all clergy are men, then men have all the final decisions on money as well. And so that can make it difficult for women's voices to be heard. It really depends on local leaders being willing to listen to women. And so that kind of creates a situation that sometimes we refer to in Mormon feminism as leadership roulette, whereby some leaders, so local leaders, will be more willing to listen to the needs and requests of women, and others will be less so. But women are never able to insert themselves into the hierarchy and make sure that their own needs are met.
Right. And one thing I think that's important to talk about, like especially when we're talking about, when I talk to people from other faiths, one thing they're able to do in activism, which we're not so much able to do, is that they might talk to one progressive clergyman and get him to say, start ordaining women within his own local congregation or start implementing more progressive practices like that. And then that'll become more popular as more congregations try it and it moves on till it spreads to the whole church. That's not really an option in our church because our church has such a hierarchical structure and the main policies are all set at the highest level of church governance, which is an all-male group of people who set policy for the entire church worldwide. And so even though locally there's not as much that we can do to change that.
Right. We're in a lot of other traditions. Congregations themselves have a certain degree of power. Congregations don't really have the power within the LDS church to make other decisions other than what is set from the hierarchy.
Right. I think we should probably also mention the things that Mormon women can do in our church. Like, we do preach from the pulpit in our church. However, I say that with a modifier because on a local level, I'd say that women almost preach from the pulpit as often as men do. But when we look at like our big general meetings where the real doctrine is set and the curricula is set and followed, those are our general conferences. They happen twice a year. And at those meetings, you only have just a couple of women speak while 30 to 40 men speak. And so it really is dominated by men.
Yeah, that's a tricky one because women don't have the opportunity to speak, but we also don't have as much of an opportunity to speak and we never set who speaks. So that those things are tricky. And we do have both church-wide leaders for women and local leaders for women. But ultimately, all of their decisions are still subject to approval by the men who are over them. And so there's a lot of tension that is created there.
And not only are the decisions approved by men, but those women themselves are selected by men. Women don't choose their own leaders in our church. I think another thing that goes with that, too, is where even in these minimal kind of authority that women have in, you know, in women's groups and in women and children groups, this authority is actually limited to over women and over women and children, while men in our church preside over everyone. So women really are always below, even when they're in a leadership position. Should we talk a little bit about the goals of the Mormon feminist movement and what Mormon feminists are trying to do within our faith? Of course, there are different kinds of Mormon feminists who have different goals. Personally, I happen to be someone who strongly believes in the ordination of women. And I believe that that really needs to be the main goal because I don't see us making progress on these other smaller issues or maintaining that progress, even if we make it without the ordination of women, because women are so excluded from decision-making authority in our church.
And I think that something that goes with is the Mormon feminism, and for those of us who believe in that women should be ordained, is that if the LDS church were to get to a place where it could ordain women, that wouldn't be like the end. That would be like the beginning, because what we'd be doing is allowing women to make decisions and to make financial decisions and counseling sorts of decisions and policy decisions. And our goal would be that hopefully then that having women's voices at every level of the church would help us be able to make more inclusive policy and more inclusive curricular materials. And so I think it's important to see that we want the ordination of women because we want women's voices heard at all levels of church administration, not just for simply women to be ordained, but really women aren't well represented in the church hierarchy. And that's a very real problem.
Exactly. And I think it's probably a good point to mention here that Nancy and I are both activists, and we've both been very much involved in the group Ordain Women, which is seeking ordination of women in the church. So that is the perspective that both of us happen to come from. However, there are other groups of Mormon feminists who have different kinds of goals. There are Mormon feminists who are seeking to change those policies that Nancy talked about without ordination, sort of make those changes in the meantime, and maybe even instead of ordination, because some women don't care as much about that. And there's a lot of church policies that people are interested in changing.
But then there's also a part of Mormon feminism which wants to seek greater recognition for the kinds of spiritual needs of women, so, and for a kind of different sort of spirituality. Over the history of the LDS Church, you know, women have acknowledged spiritual gifts and responsibilities and powers, which were kind of taken away during the course of the 20th century. And we want acknowledgement for things like the idea that God may have a wife, or and that we call her Heavenly Mother, and that we want to be able to include her in our language about the divine, and to be able to perhaps even pray or pray openly and in church meetings in ways that include the idea of a feminine divine, as well as just our traditional idea of Heavenly Father and the masculine divine. And so there are these ideas that kind of are associated with having divine models for women that kind of speak to women's experiences.
Right. There are a lot of women who are working to sort of bring back traditions that we used to have in the past. Like, at present in our church, pretty much men are the only ones who give blessings. And that wasn't always the case. There was a time when women were giving spiritual blessings, and many women would like to see that come back. There are also some past practices, like polygamy is the main one, which we've had in the past, which still affect our doctrine today and our practice today. We still have our policies around marriage and divorce, and the wording that we use in those sacred ceremonies still reflects on those practices we've abandoned over 100 years ago. And so that's another thing that people would like to see change.
So in recent years, we've had some pretty intense activism within Mormon feminism to try to create some different kinds of changes in the LDS Church. And for many of us within the Mormon feminist community, we feel like we had a little bit of progress with activist actions like wear pants to church day or let women pray, where we asked church leaders to allow women to pray in our general conferences and to consider maybe more expansive roles for women. But with the Ordain Women movement, and then with the subsequent excommunication of one of its founders, Kate Kelly, I think that there's Mormon feminist activism has also turned outside of the church as well. That we've been through a period where it's been very intensely focused on change within the church. But as some of these difficult things have happened and excommunications have happened, we've also seen Mormon feminists then act from their kind of Mormon feminist practices and beliefs and values and look to activism outside of the LDS Church, and to realize that the women's movement or even is bigger and broader than just within the LDS Church structure too. And so I think we've seen people become educated on issues of anti-racism and LGBT inclusion and disability and labor and immigration, and then become involved in activism which stems from maybe their Mormon feminist commitments in other spaces as well. So we've gone from a very internally focused activism to also including an externally focused activism.
Yeah, and I think the worldwide feminist movement really needs religious activists like us, because when you look at one of the main barriers that they're encountering to implementing more progressive policies, a lot of those are based in religious traditions. And we're the ones who know how to talk about those religious traditions and how to address them.
Right. Even though we certainly experience sexism or gender discrimination in the secular sphere, it's almost as though we take discriminatory practices within religion as acceptable, where we wouldn't necessarily see them acceptable on principle in the kind of broader secular world. And so it's very difficult when we're when broadly speaking and across many religious traditions, there's an association of power and authority and God with maleness. And that still is acceptable in so many places where gender discrimination wouldn't be acceptable.
And that actually makes me think of another kind of group of people who are Mormon feminists that are working sort of within the church, who are encouraging women to kind of ignore our patriarchal traditions and take advantage of more opportunities in the broader society. And that's not really my brand of Mormon feminism, but it is a very popular one. And they do a lot of good things, which I benefit from, like creating sort of cultivating communities of progressive communities where people, like-minded people who don't support patriarchal traditions, can be Mormon and share those Mormon beliefs while at the same time sharing a commitment to equality. Let's talk a little bit about the barriers to Mormon feminism, the kind of things that prevent Mormon feminists from reaching their goals. When we're talking about within internal church policies, I think one of the biggest barriers is that within our church, we don't have any sort of system for communicating with church leaders and addressing church policies. We don't have public forums. We don't make policy making is all done privately. And actually, many of our policies are hidden from public views, so we can't even talk about them or see them. And they actually have a policy where if we try to contact a church leader and ask them to make a change to policy or doctrine, they will take our letter and return it, and without reading it, return it to our local congregation leader who has no authority to change those policies. So communication is a big problem.
And that's something that's I didn't understand until I became very involved with Mormon feminism, which is that all mechanisms for communicating with church hierarchy are really cut off to us. And so in some ways, we get a lot of pushback when Mormon feminists try to engage in big public activism, and there's a lot of criticism of trying to embarrass the church. But the truth is that we have no other pathways to offer feedback.
We still maintain a lot of kind of archaic policies around disciplining church members, where church members are punished for expressing their opinions on certain issues. And even though those local administrators are the ones who administer the punishments, once that punishment is administered, it follows you worldwide. So you can't just move to a friendlier mm-hmm. congregation. That's not an option for you. Once that punishment has been administered on you, it affects you everywhere. And according to our theological beliefs, it even affects you in heaven after you die. So that is a big deal. And I think that one thing that I didn't even realize when I first started becoming a Mormon feminist activist is that I assumed that to get in trouble through church discipline, you had to break a rule, which actually isn't the case. Within our church, there aren't any guarantees around the exercise of free speech. So even for just expressing your opinions about an issue and disagreeing with church leaders, you can have severe punishments from the church.
There are many examples of women writing about women's history very honestly and truthfully and, possibly. And then they are punished for the things that they reveal about church history, and sometimes the difficult things that they reveal about church history, where they have not broken any rule and they feel committed to the LDS church, but they also feel committed to understanding its history openly and fully. And that's often resulted in excommunication. And it's also the case where when women speak up, sometimes in very public ways and ask for changes, then they are also disciplined. And I think that creates a very difficult relationship between Mormon feminist activists and the LDS church.
Yes, and I think it should also be pointed out when we're talking about church discipline is the sexist nature of how the rules are actually written in a sexist way, where there are different rules for disciplining men versus disciplining women, and it's actually easier to discipline a woman, a Mormon woman, than a man. And so women are in a particularly precarious position when we actually speak out and voice our opinions. We even have a system called informal discipline, in which male leaders can implement all sorts of punishments against a woman. A particularly concerning one is that they can prevent a woman from attending a wedding. They can prevent her from being married in the temple. They can prevent her from attending the weddings of her children or the people that she loves if they don't agree to whatever that local leader tells them to do. So that's a big concerning one. And that affects both men and women, but I think it affects women more because of the precarious situation that women are in within our church. Since we don't hold the priesthood, we're more expendable than men. They don't need us for very many volunteer things that they do at church because we're excluded already. And so we're more expendable. They can punish us and they don't really need to worry about it as much as if they punish a man and then they lose that volunteer service that they need. Let's talk about something a little bit more upbeat now and like talk about just a few Mormon feminist victories that we've had. Some things that we feel like we really have accomplished in this church. So I'll start. One thing that I was really proud of is ending the ban on mothers as seminary teachers. For decades, we had an embarrassing and a completely discriminatory policy in which a female seminary teacher was fired from her job when she had her first child. And then she was not allowed to return to work until her youngest child had moved out of the house. So pretty much she was gone for good at that point. I really feel like the Mormon feminist movement did a great job of bringing this to light and making a change. I looked into this and published some information that I learned about this, and it really took off. People started talking about it. That article that I put up on our blog, theexponent.com, was linked to by several national publications, such as the New York Times and Salon, who talked about this issue. And as it became more public and people started talking about it, it became apparent that Mormons themselves were not okay with this, that it wasn't something that any modern Mormon felt comfortable with. And eventually the policy was changed, actually not very long after it became public. So I was proud of that.
So when I think of things that I'm proud of or pleased with, I have a lot of thoughts. One was seeing Jean Stephens be the first woman to pray in General Conference was a tremendous moment of relief and joy. But I also think that the LDS Church has had such a difficult relationship with its history for a really long time. And in 2013, it started publishing some essays that to try to reconcile the narratives, the kind of smoother narratives that it had presented about itself with the actual historical narratives of what really happened. And when it started publishing those, that series of essays called the Gospel Topics Essays, what they had to do was draw on the work of Mormon feminist historians from the last 50 years, even women that it had disciplined for writing those histories. And I felt, even though the essays weren't everything I wanted them to be, I felt proud that Mormon women, Mormon feminists who had done this really hard work and who had suffered even for doing this important historical work, were finally being acknowledged in some way as, it was validating. It was validating to see that this had been Mormon women's work for decades. And it was finally being validated, not in an open, you know, LDS Church acknowledges contributions of Mormon feminist historians kind of way, but that Mormon feminist historians had brought up as being difficult and challenging were in fact being acknowledged. That those issues are finally being acknowledged as both real and historical and as challenging. And I feel like that's a huge part of Mormon feminist contribution to the LDS Church is writing Mormon women's history.
Something that we've been working in ordained women was trying to separate the belief among Mormons that priesthood was the same thing as manhood. I mean, it makes sense because of the way we universally ordain men and don't ordain any women, that it just feels to Mormons like priesthood is the same thing as manhood. And if we can't get past that barrier of seeing women as capable of being priesthood holders and priesthood bearers, how are we going to ever ordain women? And that is something that we've been working on for a while. When those essays came out, one thing that they did differently is they talked about priesthood differently, not as a gendered thing, not as manhood, but as something that both men and women exercise. Albeit they, you know, I don't think they went far enough for either of us, of course. But one thing that was nice about those essays is that they kind of tried to push that away and have priesthood not be so much about manhood, which I think is an important first step towards getting there. I'm going to ask these other people that we talked to in the course of this series about their advice for us, about what we can learn from them as we continue to work within Mormon feminism and within global feminism. But right now I was wondering if we have any advice for everyone else, the things that we've learned within the Mormon feminism movement that we think would help those working in other kinds of feminist movements.
So I think one thing that's important here, and a lot of our discussion has focused on Mormon feminists and their relationship and their problems with the LDS Church. But I think that one thing that has happened, I've seen this in myself and I've seen this in a lot of other people, which is that when we come together and provide community support and when we provide education for each other as women and as feminists and as people who are trying to be more open and accepting and understanding, that we realize that it's not just the kind of little battles or the bigger battles that we have with the LDS Church that are important here, but rather the ways in which we grow and we change and we develop. One problem I think that we have in the Mormon feminist community is that we have been so centered on changes within the LDS Church that we haven't necessarily looked at changes that we need to make in our own organizations. And so I think that we haven't, you know, largely Mormon feminism, like feminism within the United States, you know, largely we have been kind of a middle class white women's movement, and that we have to work to be more inclusive, and that we have to listen to LGBT people and people of color and women with disabilities and people who don't experience the same privileges that we do as white people, and to try and to ask them and to acknowledge the particular difficulties that they have with different identities within the LDS Church, and also champion their causes. And within the Mormon feminist community, we have done a lot of this work in the last couple of years of trying to become educated, and there is still so much more that we need to do. So when we create feminist movements, if we create movements that are mostly championed and headed by or led by white women, then we cut ourselves off to the full range of possibility and change that we need to engage in. And that is a critical piece of this, that we will grow and develop and change and become better Mormons and better feminists as we become more inclusive, as we understand the concepts of intersectionality, and as we seek to embrace not just our own causes and to kind of champion the issues of our own oppression, but also for other people who have different identities.